began so long ago with a band of Queen's Park men.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Spiders Talk podcast. David Blair, Enzo Tamanini and Callum Stewart. Day after the end of, well, I'm going to say it's been a pretty miserable bank holiday weekend for myself. As not only did what was supposed to be just a little bit of minor work getting done in my house turn into a full redecorating job of our living room, thanks to some damage caused by said contractors. Not only has that been taking up all my time the last couple of days, on Saturday afternoon I had the misfortune of going to Greenock and watching Queen's Park lose 2-0 to Greenock Morton, which unfortunately Enzo and I, we were there, we're going to have to discuss that. It was a pretty miserable day there. As I say, it just capped off a rather rough bank holiday weekend for myself. Callum, you, last time we spoke to you, you told us that obviously you're out in Malawi right now and you had some kind of magical mystery adventure into a rainforest somewhere. Tell us, please tell us that went well and you at least enjoyed your weekend.
In parts, yes. The actual trip was pretty fun. We went into the rainforest, which I've never been into before, so that was good. There was like a wee coffee tour, all that sort of stuff was very, very nice. However, we foolishly got told from people who have been there before, they were like, oh yeah, the road up to the lodge places, it's a wee bit dodgy for the last wee bit of it. And I was like, okay, well, drive to get there, it must just be like, I don't know, the last kilometer or something like that. No, it was 24 miles of off-roading to get to the last part of this lodge, which took us comfortably over 2 hours to do those 24 miles. And it was honestly the most ridiculous driving experience of our life. I wasn't even driving, but we were all just sitting in the back seat, holding on to the sides, hoping that the car didn't topple. And then on the way back down, part of the exhaust sort of semi fell off, so that was clanging about the place as well. So not quite as sort of relaxing as I might have hoped it'd been, but it sounds like, yes, neither of us have had the ideal weekend in parts, but I was glad. By the sounds of it, that was still more enjoyable than watching Morton at the weekend. So I don't envy yous.
You just took the words out of my mouth, Callum. I'd probably rather sit through 24 miles of African wilderness off-road and with an exhaust hanging off, clanging about than watch that game again, because it was absolutely brutal. Unfortunately, the rest of my bank holiday weekend was quite nice, but that sort of that game put a bit of a dampener on things, because let's be completely honest, it was, by quite some distance, the worst performance since Davidson took over. I think that's probably fair to say, David.
Yep. Yeah, I would agree with that 100%. It was pretty miserable. We're not going to have too much to say about it, really, because we always do try and talk mostly about Queen's Park and what we do during the game. Unfortunately, as I say, by our lead up to it, it kind of, for those that maybe weren't there, it kind of tells you what we did during that game. Starting lineup had a little bit of a surprise and not a good one. We were obviously missing Dom Thomas. He did go off the week before injured late on. I think during the week, I don't recall exactly what Callum Davidson said in his sort of match preview interview that was posted a couple of days before the game, but I think there was maybe still hope that Dom Thomas would be fit. Turned out that wasn't the case, so Stuart McKinstry came into the squad in his place, and it was Sean Welsh wearing the captain's armband for Queen's Park for the first time. The first half was, I mean, yeah, there really wasn't much. Queens had one shot with Jack Turner from a bit of distance. I think it was maybe about 20, 25 yards. It was straight at Mullen. Didn't really have too much to do in order to save it. Morton did have a couple of chances. Calum Ferry did have one really good save early on. It was I can't remember who hit the shot, mind you, but It was a really good save from our corner of the main stand. We could, you know, see him get down low and tip it round the post for a corner. It was a good one from him. Aside from that, he was involved in the only other real bit of action in the first half, where he took a bit of a late hit from Jack Byrne? I don't know what his name is, but he came charging in as Ferry went to collect the ball. I don't really know how much contact was made. However, Callum Ferry certainly wasn't happy, but he couldn't quite decide whether he wanted to get up and give the player a seam to, or to try and milk the injury and try and get him booked. So he just kept jumping up and down and then falling on the ground again. Wasn't the most convincing sight I've ever seen. But yeah, Enzo, I'd say the first 45 before we go on to where things went really downhill, it was pretty miserable, especially considering we were going into that game, Morton on the back of 5 losses in a row in the league. We were riding high. We were a fair bit optimistic going in, and God, it was horrible.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't even beyond the fact that obviously we were struggling a little bit. I just don't think it was a particularly entertaining game. And I don't really know what I put it down to be honest with you. Like, I wonder if at this point, there's still, I know there have been some changes to the squad, but I really do wonder if a degree of it is psychological, or I'm not entirely sure. It wasn't great, but at the same time, I was hoping that we would have one of those. It's happened so many times since David's come in, where we would go in at half time and then come out slightly stronger in the second half. And it just, the opposite happened. It just wasn't to be. It wasn't a pleasant game of football to watch.
No, it wasn't. As I say, there was so little happening. I suppose a big event that did happen right at the very end, there was that late challenge on Jack Thompson by Muirhead, I think it was. Got him booked, and Thompson was down for a couple of minutes getting treatment. Got back up and tried to run it off, but he was inevitably subbed off at half-time. So Dom Thomas already missing that game through injury, and Jack Thompson now injured as well. So we'll wait to see what news comes of that injury, if any. Hopefully he'll be all right for next week. But yeah, that wasn't ideal. Alex Bannon came on at half-time in his place, and you know, didn't have a bad game, I don't think, himself certainly. But you know, Jack Thompson has been such an important player for this season. Him missing would be, you know, it would make our chances even less of getting a result against the league leaders this coming Saturday, wouldn't it, Callum?
It would, yeah. I mean, if you were to pick players in this team that you don't want out, Thompson and Dom Thomas are right up there at the top of that list. And yeah, I did fear a wee bit when I seen Dom Thomas out. We obviously talked about it a bit last week. Who would we want in if Dom Thomas wasn't available? Because we knew there was a possibility. I think we all agreed that McKinstry would be the more likely option based off of who Davidson's been playing most of the time when we're sort of making subs. But as I would have liked to have seen Cars come on and see what he could do perhaps. But yeah, if we lose Thompson for any period of time, that's a worry, because he's so influential on this side. And interestingly, I was having a wee look back. Can you remember the last league game that Dom Thomas didn't play this season?
A season? Mm-hmm. So he's missed another one this season. It must have been right at the very start, surely, because it feels like he's been in the team forever.
He has. I couldn't find one league game that he didn't start this season. So that was, because we were also discussing that last week, that it feels like he's ever present, and he is, it seems. I didn't troll through the cup games and stuff like that, but yeah, it's that is the kind of stuff that starts to, you were saying it just before we started, Enzo, that you're starting to get properly concerned. And I mean, I think you've been properly concerned for a few weeks, but throw in a few injuries into the mix on key players, and you do worry a wee bit, because you start looking to the depth of the squad that maybe hasn't done it under the Veldman era, and you start to think, oh no, where are we going with this? So hopefully it's nothing too serious.
Yeah, I would really like a bit of an update on that one, to be honest with you, because as you say, we are still in a very, very precarious situation. The fixtures over the next couple of weeks have given me the absolute fear. And the last thing we need, I mean, Dom Thomas, and see, if I were to pick two players that I didn't want to get injured, it would be Dom Thomas and probably Rudy Payton would be right up there as well, actually. But let's be honest, it's not a decision that anybody wants to have to make. Because we're so reliant on these top guys to do what we know they're so capable of doing every single week for us, that it probably does have a massive knock-on effect on the rest of the squad and overall performance. So, yeah, it would be nice to get a formal update on where these guys stand. But I suppose realistically not knowing how the club goes about these things, and I understand why they go about these things as well, like the way they do, because there's obviously the sort of, you know, keep your opponent guessing side of it, even if that is an unusual tactic, but ultimately I think that's the thought process behind it. Realistically, the best we'll really hear is when it comes to Davidson giving us a wee bit of an interview ahead of the United game on Saturday, which is going to be another very, very, very tough test.
Sorry,
Calum, I was going to say, I've just gone and found when sort of Dom Thomas last missed a game. It was 11th of April 2022. So that's going into the 21-22 season against Cove Rangers. Funnily enough, that was also a 2-0 defeat. So there's something there, perhaps. That was the last time he was not in the squad at all. He's appeared in every single game since then, according to the Transfer Market website. So blame them if that's wrong. But yeah, he's not missed a game in nearly 2 years. What was that, 11th of April? And that was, yeah, just a couple of days before. So just shy of 2 full years he's played in every single game. So it just shows how important he's been for us, doesn't it?
It does. It does. And I guess bringing it back round to the Morton game itself, how was the actual game? Because, I mean, from the highlights, from what I could see, it just looked like Morton had the better of the chances on the whole, which kind of is reflective of most of the games against them, aside the one where they got a guy sent off, where it was a wee bit of a strange scenario. But most of the time, it does feel like that. And I honestly thought going into this one that we've got a spine of a team now. We've brought in Wilson. We've got Welsh in midfield. I just kind of thought that would make a significant difference to like the solidity of the team. But it was kind of revert back to the similar ways in which we seem to lose games against Morton. Set pieces, obviously, two of them. Very, very poor defending on the first goal, and Cal Ferry having a howler for the second, which again, he seems to bring out sometimes against Morton. Remember the big air punch that he had against them in one of the games? I can't remember if that was this season or last season, but was it a similar sort of game against Morton? I seen that they had like 4 yellow cards. Was it the sort of usual fare that you'd expect?
I actually thought, well, you mentioned the yellow cards there. Honestly, I thought the ref during the game, I thought he had a really good game. I didn't think that there was anything, like any sort of weird or incorrect decisions that were made. I was then surprised to go on Pie and Bovril and see the Morton fans screaming and howling about how bad the referee was. I generally thought that he got, certainly our yellow cards that were given to us, I thought he got most of them right. And I think I even said it on Pie and Bovril that there was one where, I suppose maybe the only one that he may have got wrong is finally a decision that may have helped us, because there was a tackle by Sean Welsh in the first half that looked like a pretty, I don't know if it was a dangerous lunge, but it's certainly one of those kind of lunges in the middle of the park where you see them given as like a yellow card. And that wasn't given, so I could maybe understand a complaint there. But aside from that, I generally thought the ref had a really good game. So I don't think that was an issue. In terms of how Morton played, they played how Morton play. We were just not at it again. As it is now, just it's a fact that it doesn't matter what manager we have in charge. It's a fact that's how they're setting themselves up. We're not dealing with it at all. We haven't dealt with it really since that game at Ockleview, where we were 2-0 up, and well, we still threw that away, but we had a very good 45 minutes against them there in that day, and ever since then, we've been absolutely rubbish. There was a few times, and I mean early on as well, their tactics seemed to be hit it long to Muirhead, who was playing out wide left, so up against Louis Longridge, and the aim was get the ball to Muirhead, who's going to win the header, and then bring other guys into play, and that's who they were going to attack. Him and Longridge had a bit of a battle, and Thompson came over and helped out a bit as well. I did think at times, Muirhead again, a big physical guy and uses it well. Longridge did struggle a little bit against him to begin with, but we did enough to make sure that the times that he did get in, nothing really came of it. Then after that though, it just, as the game went on, they kind of changed how they were attacking. They stopped doing that as much. They then went back to playing through Oakley and getting him to back into defenders and win fouls. And when he was up against Danny Wilson did it really well against him. I think Danny Wilson only missed one header that I can recall. I thought Wilson dealt with him excellently. And again, you know, Wilson knew what to do, because Oakley's round the back, grabbing the shirt and pulling and elbows up and stuff. Wilson just dealt with him every single time. It was really good to see. Unfortunately, Oakley backed into Alex Bannon. It was at the other end of the park, so it wasn't particularly clear at the time exactly what happened. But unfortunately, it was Oakley winning the fill for the free kick that, you know, we then didn't set up well for and conceded the first goal. And then, well, the second goal, well, we've all seen the replays. I don't really want to dwell on that too much more. But yeah, just when you say, was it more of the same against Morton, rather than worrying about, oh, how do they play, etc., 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 it's 8 games in a row that we've been absolutely tragic against Morton. And surely by now, somebody at this club has to be able to figure out a way of how to deal with them.
Well, see instead of focusing on how to deal with Morton, could we maybe talk a little bit about how we need to improve at dealing with set pieces in general? Because I feel as though that...
We've been doing that all year.
Well, exactly. And it is something that needs to get better, because I thought... I think, to be fair, right, it has gotten better, because, you know, we would have probably, if we didn't have a guy like Danny Wilson, we would have probably conceded about 4 or 5 from set pieces on Saturday against Morton. We'd have probably conceded about 3 or 4 from set pieces against there last weekend. And that nothing each game at Raith Rovers. Again, there, we'd have probably conceded about 3 or 4 from corners as well under Veldman prior to Wilson coming in. And the defence in general toughening up a little bit. But it is still problematic for us. And I'm not entirely sure whether it's just something that they're still working on behind the scenes, is that they're still working on training and it just hasn't quite clicked yet. But it's quite frustrating how, I mean, I haven't had the time to go through and figure it out, but how many goals that we've conceded do come from set pieces? Because it, you know, proportionally, it must be massive.
It is, and it doesn't feel like that swings the other way in terms of the amount of goals that we actually score from set pieces as well, do you know what I mean? Which makes it a wee bit more frustrating. And you're right, like if you look at the goals that we conceded, particularly the first one, the sort of setup in terms of the defensive line, if you watch the highlights and slow it down, you can kind of see Welsh waving his arms around a wee bit, but just before they take the free kick, you've got Robson, then you've got Broadfoot, then you've got Welsh, and then you've got Baird. So you've got Broadfoot and Baird, who are very, very big guys, basically being man-marked. I don't know if it was man-marking, it looked kind of zonal to me, but you've basically got Baird and Broadfoot up against Robson and Welsh. And you talked about, David, how Wilson wins most headers that he gets. So I agree with that, and that's been the case since he came into the side, to be honest. He's really, really good in the air. Why is he not beside the biggest, or two of the biggest guys in the team? I'm not too sure. It feels like maybe Imrie has done well against us again in terms of figuring out how we set up and positioning his team to target them. I don't know. And even from the free kick, I'm wondering, like, is that another deliberate attempt? It's a bit of an odd style of free kick to take, if you know what I mean. Like, deliberately hitting it low so that it bounces off the ground. Like, is that playing to the pitch? Or have they looked at Cal Ferry and thought he potentially struggles with that? I'm not sure. But I agree on the set pieces, Enzo. It does feel like we concede a disproportionate amount compared to what we score.
So just kind of talking about the second goal, and I know you said you didn't really want to go into too much detail because I'd rather not relive it myself. At the time, I thought it took a bad deflection just because we were at the other side of the pitch, but having seen it back, it was just a really poor mistake. But I mean, is there kind of the way that that's gone in, are there similarities to kind of the Airdrie goal that we thought he should maybe have done a little bit better with as well? I mean, listen, we big up Cal Ferry, so I don't think it's, you know, too harsh of us to potentially question one or two things here and there. Where, as you say, Callum, it was hit at him relatively low and he just maybe didn't really get to it well enough. Either way, though, I don't know. I mean, I think it's gotten to the stage where there's probably no point in discussing Cal Ferry's ability with a Greenock Morton fan, because he does have a howler in him, and it seems as though, you know, they always come against them, and fair play, you know, they're just not going to believe you that he is actually a fantastic goalkeeper at this point.
Yeah, no, they're not, and I don't really want to dwell on it. It was a poor goal to concede. I'm sure everybody knows that, and, you know, Ferry himself included. I suppose the only saving grace is that, yes, okay, that there is these wee howlers every now and then, but they do seem to come against Morton, and we don't play them again for the rest of the season. So yep. Fingers crossed he's back to being his usual self and saving us more points than he's cost us, which has certainly been the case this season. And despite what certain, you know, as you say, Morton fans are saying online, because they seem to have a lot to say after the game. He is one of the best goalkeepers in this league, despite the occasional howler. And well, that's it. We'll move on, and we'll. I honestly don't want to talk really much more about the game. What I will say, let's say, because just after that, when we went 2-0, we changed formation, didn't we, Enzo? And we had Josh Scott moving from left wing back to right mid.
That's right.
And we
yeah.
moved 4-4-2. There were a couple of other substitutions as well to show that up. We did have a couple of, I don't know, a couple of half chances. There was, of course, the Liam McLeish chance at 0-0, which we skipped over because we were too miserable about the goals. But Sheridan was subbed off, who was not happy being subbed off about on the hour mark. But McLeish's first touch was to knock the ball through on goal, one-on-one with the keeper. Unfortunately, just toe-poked his chance round the post. It's a couple of weeks now where he's had those chances, so got to hope that he takes the next one, because it could prove to be very important if we take the lead there. Classic cliche, isn't it? You never know how the game would have gone. You never know how they react.
Do you think should have done better? I feel as like he probably should have done it. I don't know if maybe it was just that, because obviously he's been scoring so many goals for the B team when these opportunities have presented themselves. And I don't know if maybe it's just the, you know, doing it in front of a bit of a crowd and there being slightly more pressure there. And obviously, you know, he's get bigger, stronger, faster defenders closing in on him, and probably a goalkeeper who knows how to handle, you know, make himself bigger than what he's used to playing against. But I do feel as though he probably should have tucked that away. And obviously that would have, you'd imagine, have had a pretty dramatic impact on the trajectory of the rest of that game.
Oh yeah, 100%. Yeah. That's what I do feel for him a wee bit, because it's always hard when you're a young guy or just a substitute in general, and you're coming on for like wee periods in games. That's a bit of a longer spell that he got there than he's been used to, I guess. But I mean, the good element for Raymond McLeish is that he does get himself into these positions. We've seen strikers come into the team before and you feel like they're never making any chances for themselves. Do you know what I mean? Whereas he seems to be good at breaking that line, and if he gets a good pass through, and I'm sure that will come, because we've seen it with him in the reserves. He scores an absolute shed load of goals, and you're probably right, Enzo. There might be a wee bit of, oh my goodness, I'm through on goal at the senior level, perhaps, I'm not sure. But it's that sort of stuff that's going to define the rest of our season. It is going to be big moments, because you talk about like the Liam McLeish one. I think there is an argument on the push on Turner. I think if that was given, I think you could justify it, if you know what I mean. It's just that wee bit of like luck going our way in some instances as well, getting the decision that falls our way instead of the opposition's, something along those lines. But it's the games are closing down pretty quickly, which is starting to get a wee bit concerning. And I just keep looking back to that series of draws that we had where against Thistle, etc., where I feel like we should have picked up a few more wins or a few more points out of those, which
would have given us a bit more breathing room. At least one win there would have given us a bit more breathing room, let's be honest, because the next 2 weeks are, I said it earlier on, they're pretty terrifying. We've got Dundee United on Saturday, when Inverness have our Broth, and then we play them the following week. Just depending on how that goes, we're at the stage where we're potentially getting into the last, what is it, would it be 3 games of the season in 9th place? And I know that, listen, we've talked about this, you know, we talked about this last week, we probably talked about it the week before and the week before that again. I'm not criticising, like, you know, in a bubble, the performances under Callum Davidson and the points that we've picked up under Davidson are just night and day compared to where we were under Veldman. It's just that we're still trying to dig ourselves out of that massive, massive hole that we we got ourselves into in the first place.
Yeah, you're right. The league table's scary. We've been talking about it recently in the last couple of episodes. I think we're going to have to mention it again. We can't stop now, unfortunately. Before we do that, Enzo, we have to try and pick a man of the match from that game. I'm going to defer to you first because I'm speaking right now, so I can make you go first.
I haven't got a clue. I honestly don't know who I would give it to. I'm curious to hear your thoughts because I'm sort of leaning potentially towards Longridge actually, but I don't know if he did enough to quite merit man of the match. But I suppose it's less about who was great and more about who was better than everybody else in a game like this. What were you thinking? Who were you leaning?
Longridge would have been in contention with me had he not started chatting a little bit of shit to a Morton fan about a throw-in, and then unfortunately, just straight after that, he miscontrols an easy pass straight out for a throw-in, and that was it.
And it's just one of those things that like gets the crowd up, you know, it gets the crowd up for it because the crowd's going, this guy's playing a bit of a dick, and he can't even play football. But obviously, we know that he can play football, but it gets the crowd on your back, and it's just not great when that happens.
Longridge probably would have been in contention for me, I'd say, up until that point. Honestly, after that, I mean, I thought Thompson and Wilson did all right at the back.
I thought Wilson...
Midfield, yeah, it's probably going to be Wilson, to be honest. Midfield was not great. It's just we didn't really have... There were so many misplaced passes, and we were going long so often as well, and it was aimless balls up to Payton and Sheridan for a bit. McLeish as well, obviously, later on when he came on. It was only in that last 50 minutes or so we went 4-4-2. We actually had some better crosses and stuff coming in. I know, you know, the previous weeks we've slated McKinstry. I'm not going to say that he was my vote for man of the match because I don't think, certainly for the first, probably until that changed to 4-4-2 actually, I don't think McKinstry was the problem, shall I say. I thought there were a couple of times that he did look all right on the ball and he played a couple of decent passes. It just didn't quite come off. But then when we changed to 4-4-2 and he was put out at left mid, he kind of annoyed me, unfortunately, because he just hugged the touchline. He wasn't coming in. He wasn't sure. And especially because we were right in that corner as well. When he's in that space, I want to hear him look at me telling a professional footballer how to play, but I want to hear him screaming for the ball. I want to hear him get, you know, talking to his teammates and stuff. He was just standing on the touchline with his arms out, waiting for somebody to look up at him, but that's no use. So I thought he did okay, but then fell away later on. I think, given, as I said earlier on, I thought Wilson did pretty well up against Oakley for the majority of the game. I think, just by default, I'm going to have to fall into saying Danny Wilson.
So I'm willing to defer to you on this one, but I actually do still think it was, again, possibly Wilson's poorest performance since he came in.
Picking a man of the match for that game is not... We're not giving a glowing report of anybody, but, we're having to do it.
Okay, well, I'll let you make the decision.
Right, well, there we go then, I suppose. We'll go with Danny Wilson as our man of the match for the 2-0 defeat to Morton.
Once a season we did refuse to give a man of the match to anyone, and that was also against Morton.
Was it the first nothing each game at Hampden?
No, it was Morton away. It would have been the 1-0.
Actually, I must have forgotten about that game because I just blocked out because it was just so horrific.
Given Edel's reason, I tell you what, we could probably just do that again and just really
it's not going to impact the overall standings of the year. So let's just give it to Wilson, despite the fact that if you're listening, Danny, it still wasn't that great.
Not going to be listening, let's be honest.
It was an off day for everybody, unfortunately, on Saturday. We'll give it to Danny Wilson and let's see if we can make this the last time that we say Morton on this podcast for this season. Right, we just don't need to mention them again. We'll just ignore them. I'd like to see if we can do that because that's two seasons now. What is that? 3 draws and 5 defeats in those 8 games. Is that right? Or is it 4-4? But either way, miserable. Absolutely miserable. Sick of the sight of them. Let's quickly look at the league table, shall we? We've already touched on how it's looking. And I think last week, any talk of, we get a wee win here, we can start looking up. I think we can also bin that chat for the rest of the season as well. It is now quite solely the only objective for this season is finishing 8th place. And anything above that is a bonus. And anything below that is a failure. You've got Dundee United sitting top of the league on 62 points after their win over Raith Rovers on Saturday. So they've got a 4-point lead, but Raith do still have a game in hand. But obviously, that 4-point gap opens up slightly for United now. Partick Thistle in third, Dunfermline on 41. Fifth place team on 40 points, Airdrie on 39, Ayr on 38. Then you've got Queen's Park in eighth on 36 points, Inverness on 32, and Arbroath 23 points. A late comeback against Dunfermline, not quite enough. They still lost 3-2 on Saturday there. Yeah, league table's looking pretty miserable. My only hope is that Inverness are looking particularly woeful. A Partick Thistle supporting pal of mine told me that on Saturday there, he reckoned Inverness could have played for another two whole days and not created a chance on goal. So it sounds like they're still struggling. That is my hope. That's what I'm clinging on to for the remainder of this season, because it's not going to be fun, is it?
I'm not expecting it to be.
No, it's not going to be fun, and I just can't believe how very limited luck we're having with other teams doing bad. I mean, obviously it's good that Inverness seem to be still in the doldrums a wee bit, and you're right, they don't really score goals anymore, which hopefully bodes well for the next few games. But just with the next couple of fixtures, I'm struggling at this point to see another scenario where we don't go into the last three games of the season having to genuinely just get some results. And let me see, who have Inverness got for their last three games? Inverness have got Raith, Dunfermline and Morton, whereas for ourselves, we've obviously got Dunfermline, Arbroath and Airdrie. So I think if I was picking between those two sets of fixtures, I'd fancy us. But do you want to be having to go into any of those games actually to win them? No. Is it going to happen? Probably.
Well, we're going to have to. It's certainly not going to be all done and dusted any sooner than probably the second last game of the season, realistically. And that's probably if we're lucky, to be honest with you. But what I'm kind of hoping for is, I know that Arbroath play Airdrie, so it's Tuesday the 2nd as we're recording this. Arbroath do play Airdrie tonight. I'm hoping Arbroath maybe pick up a wee win there, and they might think, oh, hold on, we now beat Inverness on Saturday, and we've got you never know what's going to happen, because if they were to win tonight and then beat Inverness on Saturday, they would only be what, 5 points? No, they'd be what, 4 points behind them?
Yeah, they'd be 4 points behind them, yeah.
So, I don't know. Well, they'd only be 3 points behind them, actually, if that were to happen. So that's actually, you never know. They might be thinking, you know, that this is still on. And at the same time, that game, I believe, is in Inverness, and Inverness's home record is much worse than their away record. So we really don't know until it comes to it, but I have a feeling that Inverness game in a couple of weeks is going to be absolutely massive. And despite the negativity, like I was saying earlier on, it's just, you know, things have been objectively overall fine under Davidson. Because every manager is going to have bad games, but it's not as though we started really well and have fallen off a cliff. We've been consistently picking up points at the way that you would expect to consistently pick them up over a full season if you're having a decent season. I mean, you average David's points total out, and you know, had he been here since the start of the season, we'd have 57 points. I think if I calculated it correctly, now I'm not great at maths, but I feel as though I'm sure it's around there anyway. It's just that there's just been so much work to do because we were left in a bit of a state when he took over, and it's going to be a really nervy few weeks because I'm not enjoying this at all.
No, you're absolutely right. We'll move on and we'll do the Dundee United game. We'll preview that very shortly. But thankfully, as we do our little news roundup, there's a couple of better things to talk about. So let's move on to that and try and cheer ourselves up slightly before getting scared about this coming Saturday. First of all, results of the other QP teams. So Saturday morning, you had the QP supporters team. That was a defeat on the day. It was a 2-1 defeat against Motherwell. That was in our Scottish Cup group. I'd said previously that the winner of that game would win the group and go through to the top seeds. We still finished second in the group, so we're still through to the semi-finals of the Scottish Cup, waiting to see who we'll be up against there. On Sunday, you had Queen's Park Women with their return to the south side of Glasgow playing at Lesser Hampden, the City Stadium, and they were taking on Gart Cairn, and it was a 2-0 victory for Queen's Park Women with Hannah Cunningham with an overhead kick in the first half, and then Amy Robertson scoring later on in the second half to get another 3 points for the Spiders. And I did see that they posted on Twitter saying, oh, that's us now confirmed for the promotion playoff. Aye, okay, very good. Very good, very nice. Aye. What it looks like is, I did see another tweet from somebody else, not associated with the club, I don't think, but it looks like it is just 3 more points required to secure the league title. So I don't know. Is that right?
Well, right, okay. So 3 more points required would put us 15 points clear of Kilmarnock with 5 games to play. The difference is, our goal difference is 37 better than theirs. So barring the most ridiculous capitulation in the history of football anywhere on the planet, a win on Saturday does, for all intents and purposes, guarantee the league title. But
yeah.
Essentially, usually
a better goal difference, you'd say that's an extra point, but I think if it's plus 37, that's at least 3 points, isn't it? So that's quite an incredible. I didn't realise it was quite that much of a difference. I knew it was a big goal difference, but that's quite something. So yeah, their next game, it's in 2 weeks, so they don't have a game this week, but the next game is, I believe it is another home game. I will find that and I will bring that back to you in just a second. But again, same for a couple of weeks now, it's been a matter of when, not if, they're going to win the league. And well, we're potentially 10 days or something like that away from Queen's Park Women lifting the SWPL2 title and getting promotion to the top flight next season, which would be absolutely fantastic for them. And I'm sure preparations are already underway. I'm not talking about the party, but of course they'll already be looking ahead to next season, won't they?
It's very exciting, isn't it? It'll be really interesting to see what they actually do over the course of the summer, because it's such a massive opportunity to build up both sides of the club. And full credit to them, because I don't have too many expectations at the start of this season, but the way that they've been running away with it so far is unbelievable.
And I think the women's team are in a similar situation as the men's team, where you really want a firm plan of action in place for what the kind of long-term plan is in terms of where they're going to be playing their games, and I guess with the women's team even more so, in the sense that they're now going to be promoted to a much higher level of football. We'll be playing against some really, really good teams. I mean, what are the plans for, is there going to be any form of kind of semi-professionalism implemented, or I don't really know, but it would be nice if the club had some thoughts on that, and I suppose where to share them, but we'll see what happens in the coming weeks. Hopefully we'll get a bit more information on that soon. But yeah, when it comes to clinching the league title, it would be very, very well deserved if they could also play that game at Lesser Hampden.
Yeah, it's currently penciled in for New Tinto Park. It is going to be the 14th of April. Well, that's the next game, of course, as we're saying, that's not mathematically confirming, but you know, that goal difference, it's pretty much going to be that day. So the 14th of April, and that is, New Tinto Park against Stirling Uni. Wait and see.
By the way, I believe, what was the score the last time we played Stirling Uni?
Pretty convincing, if I remember rightly. It was something like that, wasn't it?
So that goal difference will end up being like 50 better than Kilmarnock's if it's another similar game, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, we certainly will. We'll keep an eye out and see if they're able to move that game as well, because it would be great for them to see it. Well, if they've got a few home games left to see the season, it'd be great to have them back at Lesser Hampden, because, well, why not? But yeah, another great result for them. And as we say, a march to the title is well and truly underway and nearly finished. Finally, today on Tuesday, you had Queen's Park B team, the men's team, in action against Dundee. It was a 1-1 draw with Charlie Fox getting on the score sheet. So he is looking like he's back from, or on his way back from injury. Obviously, he's been out since, when was that? Was that like October or November, something like that? It's been a long, long time. Looks like he played the full 90 minutes and, of course, scored Queen's Park's only goal. And that result means that Queen's Park B have won the Reserve League title this season, which, you know, people I'm sure will mock it and say it's reserve football and things like that. But, you know, having looked at our lineups and you see, obviously, who's playing in that, we are using that as very much part of development for these younger players at the club. other teams may well be using, you know, more first-teamers more regularly. I think that was certainly the case when we played Livingston a few weeks ago, and it was quite a strong team they put out. Obviously, I know I'm saying that just as Charlie Fox scored, but he has been out for 3 or 4 months, so he's very much recovering and getting back to full fitness. So it's been great to see a number of the young players, because you've seen, well, McLeish has received a 2-year contract extension based on the majority of his performances for Queen's Park B. We've seen a number of other young players making debuts and making contributions to the first team. Zach Mawkin has made a good few appearances. At Fairley, I'm sure early on in the season, we don't have Lennon Connolly as well. There'll be a few others that I've probably forgotten, apologies. But it's great to see that these young guys have gone and used that opportunity for the B team, not only to promote themselves and get up to the first team, but they've got a wee trophy to celebrate as well today. So it's great for them, isn't it?
Aye, and as you say, it's maybe like as a competition, not something that everybody's going to be taking particularly seriously, but ultimately, whilst, like, you have to bear in mind the fact that this was essentially a youth team, a young Queen's Park, obviously now Queen's Park B, and the bulk of that squad was made up of you know, guys who are, what, 17, 18, 19 years old, and that's not the case for the rest of the teams that have been in the competition. I'm sure a lot of them will have had young players in, but for a lot of teams, it was kind of fringe players returning from injury, which, to be fair, is what we did with Charlie Fox today, but there is, you know, it is an achievement, and it's something that I'm sure they will be very proud of. But more importantly, it's all about the development of these guys who are coming along nicely, and there's so much to be excited about. And I'm sure we'll see it next season. Last year we had it, this year we've had it as well, where you've had young guys coming through and making their senior debuts. And I have absolutely no doubt about the fact that next year there'll be another name or two who you'll see in the first team lineup. Who we've not done so yet, so we'll see what happens. But there's a lot to look forward to, because we have a lot of very, very talented young players.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, if our B team isn't doing well, then it's not a great indictment of the sort of players that we've got kicking about the squad. So the fact that they are shows that they've got guys that must have potential, because you both correctly know that they're often playing against really senior guys in lots of instances. So no, it's exciting, and I also just kind of I like the idea of getting guys used to winning and being successful. Do you know what I mean? You want them when they're coming into the first team setup, whether that might just be sort of bit part roles like McLeish has had over the course of this season. You want them coming into it in a frame of mind where they're used to winning games of football. They're in a positive team. They're not just sitting dragging out like heavy defeats week on week, because that's not useful for anybody. Do you know what I mean? And it's not going to get them in the right frame of mind for coming into the first team. So all good stuff. And yeah, I really, really do hope that we start to see a large number of our starting 11 coming from the B team over the next couple of years, because I mean, more than anything, it's just quite good to see, isn't it? I personally like it when you see young guys coming through your systems and getting an opportunity and making the most of it. And the fact that we're able to attract the talent now and keep guys like McLeish, knowing that they are at a club who, ambitions-wise, is to bring these guys through, give them the opportunity, give them the support. We've got all the facilities here and stuff like that. It's important. It's important because when you've got other younger guys that are coming to the club and they can see the success of the B teams, they can see these guys like Bannon and Reid and McLeish starting to get involved with the first teams, and they're thinking, do I want to go there, or do I want to go to an established Premiership side? There's a huge incentive to come to Queen's Park, because you can start to get these good news stories coming out more and more, which is just massively important. Obviously, McKenna's the biggest example of that since going pro, I guess, with the big move that he got. But even just at a more sort of local footballing level, getting these guys knowing that if you come here, you'll be able to get into the first team or have the chance to, it's a massive boon.
Yeah, as long as there's, as you say, that clear pathway to achieving what young players all want to achieve, and that is to be playing regular first team football at a high level, is there. And I have no doubt, like the McKenna one, for example, the club, when it comes to convincing young boys to come to Queen's Park, they'll absolutely be using that as an example, and rightfully so, they should be. But yeah, I'm genuinely confident that we'll be seeing other similar moves of that sort in the next couple of years, and that's going to be huge for the future of the club.
Yeah, definitely. As we say, it's great to see the young guys winning that reserve league title, and we'll see if any more of them are able to kick on into the first team towards the end of this season. And of course, I'm sure we'll be looking very keenly over the summer to see any more contract extensions, any more players promoted up to the first team, because, you know, McLeish is obviously on the fringes. You've got to expect he'll be very much first team going next season. I wonder if Lennon Connolly, obviously, is part of his contract extension will be. I'm sure there'll be a few others chapping some doors in the club and looking to see what next season and beyond is going to hold for them. So, yeah, well done to those boys for winning that league title today. That really rounds up the Queen's Park news in terms of everything else. There's not much else going on around the club right now, but let's have a very quick chat about Billy Stark, because I don't know if you guys seen that earlier on today he's announced his retirement from football. Yeah. He's now just, of course, leaving the Scotland setup. He was the manager of the, I want to say, under-19s, but he's been involved with a number of the young teams. He was obviously, at one point, caretaker manager of the men's first team for Scotland as well. Fantastic playing career for a few different clubs. It was not like about 300 or 400 appearances for St Mirren, I want to say. He's been here, there and everywhere. Of course, what we are most interested in was his four-year managerial spell at Queen's Park, which I started following Queen's Park just towards the tail end of that, but you guys obviously experienced all of it. Many talk about it as somewhat, you could maybe call it the glory days of Queen's Park in terms of some of the things that were happening on the park and certainly some of the stories off the park as well. But we're going to talk about the football. Billy Stark at Queen's Park was quite a fantastic manager, overseeing one of the best Queen's Park teams in recent times. We spoke to David Weatherson a few months back, of course, part of the 06-07 team as well. You know, there was plenty of memories. He obviously was the manager of the cup win over Aberdeen, beating them on penalties. So, as I say, I'm going to have to defer to the two of you here. Just a chance to sort of talk about Billy Stark at Queen's Park and any particularly impressive memories, not including the ones that I've just mentioned.
I mean, those are huge, huge moments, though, I would imagine, for Callum and myself in our time supporting the club. That entire season where we got promoted, it was a style of football that you really didn't... I think it's becoming more common now with kind of younger managers that think that that's how they should be playing football. But the way we knocked the ball about, the passing game that he implemented with that team was an absolute joy to watch. And yes, he was somewhat fortunate, I suppose, that he had a lot of really good young players coming through at that time. But he knew how to develop them. He got the most out of them. Some big cup wins, especially, obviously, the win against Aberdeen got us promoted. And I have nothing but positive things to say about Billy Stark. And I'm a wee bit too young to have ever actually seen him play when he was a player. But I've heard it said quite a few times that Billy Stark's possibly the best player to have never been capped for Scotland, which is quite an interesting category to be in. But all I can say is I wish him all the best for his retirement. And he's had a fantastic career and deserves it.
Aye, it's a very good summary. It was a ridiculous period, actually. See, when you, I'm not sure you realised it when you were in it, but the quality of that squad and what those guys went on to do off the back of playing for Queen's Park, it almost seems like that would be impossible now to do something similar, to get a group of players that are that good. Obviously, playing as amateurs was ridiculous, and the Aberdeen game was just bonkers, and that's something that will live with me forever. I actually didn't realise, like, when I seen that Stark was retiring, I didn't realise he was only 47 when he was with us. Maybe it's just because I was younger at the time as well, but I feel like he's one of
you.
Well, no, I think he's one of these guys that's kind of looked the exact same for like a significant period of time. But yeah, he overseen probably my favourite Queen's team of the amateur era, and yeah, fair play to him. He went on to do a sort of very, very good stint with the Scotland squad. So hopefully he enjoys his retirement, which I'm sure he will.
Aye, it's as I say, I only started following Queen's just at the end of his spell, but I did get to catch a little bit of it. of course, I know we mentioned sort of highlights and stuff, but the playoff win over East Fife is, was it 4-1 in the second leg, or was it 4-2?
We won 4-2 at Firhill, because that game was played at Firhill. We won 4-1, and you thought, this is it, but then they get quite a late goal. But then we just went out there and we beat them 3-0 in Methil, and there was just absolutely no doubt about it. And seeing back to what you were saying, Callum, about how you maybe didn't quite appreciate it at the time, I don't think I did either, but I remember the night of that 3-0 game. Somebody said to me, it was an older guy, I don't even know his name now, which is terrible, but he was probably in his 60s at the time, and he said to me, been watching Queens for years and years, and that was comfortably the best team he could remember. And I think that made me realise how fortunate we probably were to be watching them. Now, obviously, we didn't really realise what was in store for the club in the future and the move to professionalism and the kind of climb up the leagues. But we were very lucky to witness that spell in the club's history, because they were fantastic, and it was a joy to watch.
It was such a ridiculous scenario when you think about it, that we actually didn't win the league that year and had to go up through the playoffs. And obviously, like, you're reflecting that second leg. It was a surreal experience, because I honestly wasn't that nervous. You've obviously got a level of nervousness, but I genuinely thought we were going to go out and win that game comfortably, because you're right, the first leg, when they scored the late second goal, you're a bit like, ah, well, that's annoying. But I just had absolutely no doubt in my mind that we were going to win that game, and we went out and absolutely destroyed them with some really good football. But aye, it was such a ridiculous team. I'm just thinking through all the players that were in that squad: Troughton, Kearney, Ferry, it was Kettlewell, Peyton, Weatherston. It's silly. But a very fun period to be a Queens fan.
Good times.
Yeah, they definitely were. All the very best to Billy Stark in his retirement, whatever he chooses to do with his spare time, I'm sure he'll do it very well. But yeah, that will do for the trip down memory lane there. And let's move on.
Back to reality.
Yes, very much so. Back with a bang, because it's Dundee United at home this coming Saturday. Now, so we already mentioned the league table, but as if we need reminding, Dundee United are currently top of the league on 62 points from 31 games played. However, they really should have more this season. I mean, that squad, and, you know, people will talk about Queen's Park and mock our finances and that, etc., etc. That before a ball was kicked this season, Dundee United should have done a Falkirk or a Stenhouse. I think Stenhouse Muir are still to confirm it, aren't they? I think they need to confirm this weekend. But Dundee United should have done a Falkirk, and they should have that league title wrapped up by now. And Enzo, a couple of weeks ago, we were looking ahead to, or had an eye on this game obviously coming up, and we spoke about it, and your biggest concern was that Dundee United go and lose to Raith Rovers on Saturday just there. They finally sack Jim Goodwin and they get their new manager bounce. They've won, so yes, okay, it's scary, they're still top of the league table, but if anything from Dundee United, you can look at them and say, they are prone to having a shocker this season. They can show up any time, and why not this Saturday?
Well, it's funny, isn't it? I mean, this could probably go one of two ways. Either they will absolutely grab the bull by the horns now that they've got that advantage over Raith and just win the remaining fixtures comfortably, because they are capable of doing that. They've not really had that kind of solid run of form at any point yet this season, and I suppose this would be the time to do it. Or they might actually go, oh no, and collapse under the pressure again, like they've done multiple times this season, like Raith have done multiple times this season. And I frankly don't think anybody would be surprised by either of those scenarios playing out. So all we can really do is be at our best, hopefully with our best players back to full fitness. I'm not entirely sure whether that's actually realistic or not. And go out there and give them a game. We're capable of it. I mean, I feel as though, honestly, the scoreline the last time we played them probably wasn't entirely reflective of the fact that we played okay that day. But it's a huge game for us as well. It's not just a game, you know, it's a huge game for them, yes, and a huge game within the wider context of the league, the race to the league title between Raith and Dundee United. But this is a massive game for us as well, that they all are now. And I am very, very nervous.
Yeah. It's going to be difficult. Dundee United have been the one team this year who... And I agree with you, we did I don't think the result in the last time we played them was reflective of our performance, but they are the one side this season who, pretty much every time I've seen them, I've just thought they just shouldn't be here, and everybody knows that they shouldn't be here. And I'm just frustrated that I've not seen the proper vulnerabilities that some other teams have had against them, because obviously, like, Inverness picked up a point against them, Dunfermline, who they lost against. They lost to Dunfermline, didn't they, Airdrie? They lost to Raith a couple of times.
They've absolutely demolished Arbroath every single time they've played them.
Yeah. It just seems like certain teams seem to match up well against them, whereas I don't necessarily feel like that's the case for ourselves so much. Whether that's because we try and play a bit more of a sort of good football, that sort of thing, I'm not so sure. But I can't say I'm confident in the slightest. But yeah, the flip side of that, though, is Dundee United, as you correctly said, David, have been basket cases in terms of throwing away what should be a relatively easy championship season for them. They don't go on long stretches of wins. I'm just flicking through the results right now. And aside from the start of the season, it's like win, draw, draw, couple of wins, loss. There's no long concerted period of them winning football matches. So there's every chance that we pick up points here. And for me, if we got 1 point against Dundee United, I would bite your hand off for it right now, if I'm honest.
Well, I mean, I would take a draw as well, right? But I also feel quite strongly about the fact that I feel as though for the most part this season, when we've gone into games against Raith Rovers and Dundee United, Queen's fans have almost seen them as free hits. And I don't think that's the case. As like you said, Dundee United have been prone to chucking points away against other sides. And I don't think, you know, this to me is not a free hit. There's no such thing at this stage in the season. This is a game that we should be going out with every intention of winning. And if we don't win, I don't think it's a case of, oh, well, it was Dundee United. I still think we need to focus on why that happened, because we're at such a critical stage in the season that we can't just shrug our shoulders and move on.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I'm looking back to the last time they came to Hampden. Yes, okay, the two games up at Tannadice for us haven't been great, but the game in between, was that in between Christmas and New Year? It was round about that time anyway. They came in, it was nil, in fact it was just before Christmas, wasn't it? 0-0. I'm sure that was Paul Noyton in charge. He managed to get us pretty well drilled on that day and to take a point off Dundee United, which they were, you know, it was a big disappointment for them, but we on the day, you know, we were on the back of that horrific slide and we were starting to steady the ship, and that was the beginning of our turnaround, was getting a point against them. I'm going to be forever the optimist, as well as taking on board what you've just said, Enzo. We can't really afford to be going into a game going, ah, well, if we don't get anything here, that's fine. You're right, it's really not. There's not enough time left in the season for us. And especially, if we'd beat Morton at the weekend, if we'd won 2-0 at the weekend there, maybe I would entertain some of that kind of chat. Yeah. But right now, the way the situation's going, the way that we've played ourselves into this entire season, we have to go into this game and, well, thankfully, our predictions always look at us as if we're going to win the game, and I'm sure we'll do the exact same again. But we absolutely have to go into that game with every single... Not that we wouldn't, but we have to go into that game looking to take the win off them and look to throw them back into a title fight.
Totally agree. Couldn't agree more.
In terms of our squad, injuries and things, they're now starting to potentially pile up a little bit. Maybe we'll have Charlie Fox back. I don't know for either of you if he would come straight back into the team. We'll wait and see if Dom Thomas is still out. I know Davidson's post-match interview, he kind of said that he maybe hoped Thomas would be available. I think he may have been even a close call for the Morton game, but was just held out. And Thompson as well. We'll wait and see what happens there. So two big players potentially still missing. One player that could have a big impact coming back in after a long period out. Callum, you first. What do you make of the current squad right now? What changes are you making, if any?
So, if I'm going on the basis that Dom Thomas is back, obviously he slots into ahead of McKinstry, back into that sort of front three. I'm not changing that. I think Sheridan, Payton, Thomas, I think we should still be going out, exactly as you said, David, and trying to win games of football. We've got a side that's good enough. Eventually, we just have to we just have to actually just win games, get a couple of these over the line. And I think against Dundee United, there's no point in trying to just backs against the wall for the entire period. I think they've got some frailties that I think we need to go out and try and proactively win that game. As far as the defence goes, it's a tricky one, right? Because I always spin round on the Thompson centre-back versus Thompson in midfield. If he is available for the weekend, I assume Davidson will look to play him at centre-back again. But again, I'm still of the opinion that if you can get Bannon working at the highest level that he can be at, I think you add so much by having Thompson in midfield, and that would be at the expense of Turner for me. But if Thompson isn't available, then I wouldn't be looking to Charlie Fox if he was available. It would be Alex Bannon for me, probably followed by Tizard. And I know that I think see with the length of time that Charlie, I mean, I'm a massive Charlie Fox fan, and I genuinely hope that things come good for him, because he's had a bit of a troubled season everyone had a troubled season under the Dutch gang, but he struggled a bit, and then obviously this injury. I'm not sure, given the severity of these games, if I'd be tempted to bring him back into the fold at all, really, in terms of starting games, unless it was required. But for me, I'd be going with Bannon. Everything else, I think, pretty much picks themselves for the foreseeable.
Yeah, I think I find it difficult to disagree with any of that. I get that Thompson is fantastic, and like at centre half, I get that you could probably even make the argument that it could be his best position now. And I actually also believe that any teams who are potentially looking at him and potentially looking at making an offer for him in the summer may be doing it with the thought process of playing him in that position rather than midfield. But I feel as though he just adds so much in the middle of the park if we can afford somebody else to play in defence instead. And that would always be my preference where possible. But it's just gonna depend on whether he's back at all, I suppose. And also agree that if somebody else has to drop out of the midfield to accommodate that, then it has to be Turner at this stage. I don't know that there's too much else you can do. We just need to wait and see whether Dom Thomas is back, for example. I do have my concerns about the fact that he wasn't even on the bench against Morton. Like, I think if you've got somebody who's 50-50, or potentially 60-40 one way or another, you could at least justify having them on the bench. I don't know, maybe if the thought process is definitely not going to be used, then why bother at all? But that's just when he's not in the squad at all, that really does worry me about it being a bit longer term than what would be ideal. I just don't think we have the squad that lends itself to making wholesale changes. I think a lot of it does pick itself at this stage of the season.
Yeah, the only suggestion that I have, it's not actually on the starting lineup, but during the game, I would actually like to see Sheridan play a full 90 minutes because, he would clearly disagree with the decision to take himself off or to take him off at Morton. Obviously, I'm sure Callum Davidson has his thoughts and his own thought process on what's going on, but it was yet again, not that we did much on Saturday just there, but what we did do again just felt like it was always going through Sheridan. And we've seen, how many weeks have we seen that since he came in?
Yep.
We've been very reliant on him. And it's not a slight against McLeish at all when I'm saying this. I just simply mean Sheridan has made himself very important in this squad and the way that this team wants to play and get up the park and play football. And taking him off 60 minutes in, unless it's absolutely necessary, I'm starting to get a little bit fed up of this, because I don't want Sheridan to be, you see it all the time, managers will sometimes just have players that they just don't sub, or they'll sub off at certain times, or they'll use them as substitutes for certain periods of time as well, like, and that's just how they kind of get put into like a little box like that. So I really don't want that happening, because Sheridan's so important, and he's not quite as much as Dom Thomas, but I always, again, just think he's the kind of guy that's shown himself so far that if he just gets that one wee half chance, he may very well bury it. And we're getting desperate for goals. Not that we're, you know, lacking for them with Rory Payton, obviously, up front, you know, setting top goals. Or is he joint now with Brian Graham? No, he's still one behind. You know, he's obviously fantastic season. But let's get Sheridan up there as well. Let's get him on the park for the full 90 and help him out as much as he possibly can.
It's just about whether he's got the legs in him, isn't it? That's probably what it comes down to. I agree with you, though. If he's capable of it, he adds so much to everything that we do and everything that we create going forward. So much of it goes through him, then it would be massive for us. It's just a case of whether he is capable of lasting the full 90.
Especially when you get into like lump it in the box in the last 5 minutes territory, I'd certainly rather have Sheridan kicking about there. But
what I was arguing on Saturday as well is he was also helpful at the back because he's one of the biggest players on the team and he's very good in the air.
Yeah.
And sure enough, you know, after he goes off, we concede from a free kick at the back post. So yeah, he's pretty important to the way that we are going to play. Let's do our score prediction, shall we? No updates. So, Callum, who goes first?
Well, I went. You were very gracious last week, so I'll pass the baton back to yourself as we are trailing Enzo by 2 points.
Right. Okay. No, then. 2-1 Queen's Park. Sheridan first and Payton second.
Okay. I won't tell you what my head's saying, and I'm going to go for 1-0 Queens. I feel like if we are going to win, it's going to be painful and just difficult the whole way through. I'll go for 1-0 Queens, and I will have Peyton as the goal scorer.
Right, okay. I think, do you know what, right? I'm not... It's been a while. When was the last time we won a game and kept a clean sheet? Was it the Arbroath game? Or to be fair, we've only won one game since then, haven't we? I'm just going to go. I was thinking 2-1 as well, to be honest with you, but I'm just going to go 2-0. I can't see us scoring more than two goals against them. And even at that, I think 2 is going to be a bit of a push. So yeah, I'm going to go 2-0. First goal scorer, I'm going to go with Sean Welsh again, followed up by Rudy Payton.
Cool. Oh, right. Lovely stuff. So yeah, tonight you've got Arbroath against Airdrie, so we'll keep a very close eye on that. And then into Saturday, no Friday night games this week, so it's all on Saturday. Airdrie against Morton, Dunfermline Thistle, that massive game for us, Inverness against Arbroath, and Raith against Ayr. So do any of you want to comment any of those games, or are we back to... Who cares about anything? I say aside from Inverness or Arbroath, who cares about those other three games? And all focuses on us.
I'm not sure about that, because I think Airdrie are still very much capable of getting dragged into this, depending if they don't start, you know, if they don't win in the next couple of games. But again, and I've said this so many times, it's just about us getting the results and then we'll take it from there.
Yeah, the issue that you've got now with the crop of teams ahead of us, I'm now discounting Dunfermline, obviously, from being out of it because they're in 41 points.
I can see them finishing fourth now.
Yeah, potentially. But you've got Morton, Airdrie and Ayr, which are obviously the ones that are ahead of us. They've all got at least one game in hand from us. So you do need one of them to go on an actively bad run. But means absolutely hee-haw if we don't pick up any points. So first things first, get a win. I would absolutely love it if Inverness managed to mess up against Arbroath. Just if we were able to kind of neutralise, like if we lost at the weekend and Inverness lost at the weekend and we could go into the Inverness game not having us potentially getting leapfrogged, that would be beneficial. But yeah, just win some games, please.
Yes, all we need is Queen's Park to win games, see out the season winning, and then we don't have to worry anymore. But we'll see what Saturday brings. Until next week, Calum and Enzo, it's been a pleasure as always. Continue finding us on Twitter at Spiders Talk Pod. Continue finding us as well on Pie and Bovril and all the threads relating to Queen's Park. Thank you for coming back, listening to us again this week, and we will see you all again next week.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening.
a final, league match or friendly. The day the cards are the dandy, play for the sake of the game. Play for the sake of the game.